It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. In January, the Iowa Department of Cultural Affairs unveiled a plan to renovate and modernize the State Historical Building of Iowa, something that people who work at the museum and the building will tell you desperately needs to be done. But the $80 million plan has created quite a stir because it also involves demolishing part of the building, reducing the size from 234,000 square feet to 155,000 square feet. And here to talk with us about the plan is Mary County, Director of the Iowa Department of Cultural Affairs. Hello, Mary.
Hello, Charity. Thank you for having us here today.
Well, thank you for being here. Susan Claver is also here, Administrator of the State Historical Society of Iowa. Hello, Susan.
Hello, Charity. Thank you for having us here.
Yes, thank you. And Mary, I'll start with you. As I mentioned, people who work in this building have been trying to get the message out for a long time that something needs to be done. Tell me what the needs are. Why is this so important?
Well, what the needs are. Why is a renovation, a major renovation like the one that we are proposing, it's such a key need at this time? So the State Historical Building not only houses the Department of Cultural Affairs, but most importantly, it serves as our state's flagship museum. And again, we always like to remind people that this is a public institution belonging to all Iowans, just like the state capitol. And unfortunately, our building is at a critical juncture, and it can no longer serve the DCA or Iowans as its function as a museum. And so we have brought forth a renovation solution that is able to address not only all of the infrastructure issues that are needs to, again, better function as a museum, but more importantly, Charity, you mentioned to be able to modernize the building. But what's the most important piece of this renovation and the solution brought forward is to modernize how we preserve the collection and provide access to the collection for Iowans. That's a really important piece of that that I think a lot of the focus, and probably too much, has just been on the infrastructure piece. And, of course, that is absolutely critical to how we are able to manage and care for the collection. But we just don't want it to be missed that roughly $22 million is actually going to be able to invest in that collection and as it relates to exhibits, but also a content management system and digitizing part of the collection. And again, being able to better connect it to programming that can not only if you come to our building that you can experience and have a better visitor experience, but where we can really be more reflective and representative of all 99 counties, but that we can do a better job of touching all corners of the state, all 99 counties.
All right, and we'll get to that in just a moment. I do need to talk about the infrastructure, though, for a while, because if you visit the State Historical Museum, from the surface, things look fine. So what are the infrastructure needs that make this critical?
And I think you just really touched on a really important point. The infrastructure is often invisible. So it's important to note that if we do have infrastructure changes, they are still invisible to the eye, but obviously they are needs nonetheless. So what is wrong with the building? Well, the building has had issues since day one. There are original building flaws, unfortunately. I'll go down the list as quickly as possible, but it is long. A failing building envelope. We do not have a vapor barrier, and so that makes it very challenging to control temperature and humidity levels. We have exposed pipes above the exhibits and collection areas, unsealed concrete ceilings, skylights that leak. They need to be replaced in their entirety. We have a faulty drainage system, and we also have exterior granite that is failing. And lastly, is a heating and cooling system that needs to be replaced in its entirety. But Charity, something important to note in this is it was really important as we went through this process was to make sure that we were bringing forth ultimately the best solution, what was going to best serve Iowans. And in this, we also wanted to make sure it was cost effective and sustainable for the future so that our successors weren't dealing with the same issues as it relates to the building or the collection. And we know that if we were to build new at our same square footage, it would be roughly $118 million. So we know that we have good bones to use in our current infrastructure. And so it is important that it is definitely more cost effective to renovate the square footage that is existing right now.
Okay, so you've got crumbling walls, you've got leaking ceilings. And has this actually put the archives that are there, all of these historical documents and other items, has that put them at risk?
Not necessarily at risk. They're in jeopardy. Obviously, environment is critical when we're talking about the state's collection that spans more than 157 years. And so our staff is spending right now a disproportionate amount of time on trying to control the environment. So we mitigate as much as we can. We do the best we can because as professionals, we want to make sure that we're upholding those best practices that are required of museum professionals, archive professionals. So we're really doing the best we can. But right now, where our staff needs to focus is on the content, but where they are spending a lot of time is on the environment.
Now, a major part of this plan, as we've talked about, is making a smaller building. So reducing the size of the building from 234,000 square feet to 155,000 square feet. I've been down in the archives and seen some of the wonderful artifacts that are down there. I've also seen the buckets that are collecting the water that's leaking through the ceilings. There's so much stuff there. How can you maintain this collection with so much less space in the future?
So it's important to note, Charity, that the proposed solution for the building is going to right-size it to a square footage that is more sustainable and manageable for us. You know, it's important to realize that when we began this process, we essentially started it at ground zero, if you will, working through a space program to ultimately determine how much square footage do we need, and then most importantly, for what purpose, and can it align with not only our staff, but also our budget. And if we were to build new today, we would never build a 234,000 square foot building. I think, as you mentioned, you've been down there. I think it's important to note that we have a lot of space that isn't used as efficiently and effectively as it could be. And that goes back to whether employees are placed throughout the building, adjacencies, something that I think is probably one of the most obvious things and something that we pointed out continuously are the Smithsonian-sized exhibit galleries, some of which have not been able to be changed out for 28 years. So again, that all needs to be right-sized to be more sustainable and provide a more actively refreshed visitor experience for visitors that where we can put more of the collection on display more frequently, more densely populated. We're excited because the renovation, when you're talking about modernizing, there are great examples in museums across the country, including visible storage, where we can have environmental control, but actually have, instead of walls that are just walls, they're lined with collection items. But we're also excited because we offer a little sneak peek into the basement. Every museum has an iconic experience, and we hope that that is ours, where a visitor can come in, and instead of just the private tours, which we'll still offer, visitors will be able to have a self-guided sneak peek into the basement to see where we store all of our collection, which also allows, again, public access to increase while our staff is able to not only actively manage it, but more importantly, better fulfill our mission while not worried about where the next leak is going to come into the building, but focused on how can we actively engage every fifth grader across the state to come to our building to learn about Iowa history.
You mentioned earlier digitization of some of the things. I know, obviously, if something is stored digitally, it's much, much smaller. But is there a plan to actually get rid of some of the source documents and digitize these things and store them that way?
So what our staff is doing right now, as I've said before, we've been the steward and collector of Iowa's history for more than 157 years. And so our staff, as a parallel to the building project, has been working through a variety of collection assessments. Our staff represents more than 200 years of institutional knowledge of the collection. And so while they are going through these assessments and developing necessary plans and processes to guide our collection efforts now and in the future, we're also surveying Iowans. We are going to issue another collection survey very soon. And so we want to know what Iowans want access to. So it is a very complex project, one that has never been undertaken in our 157 years of collecting. So our staff is working very diligently. Specifically, deaccessioning. This is a very common practice among museums and cultural organizations. When you are actively managing your collection, you are constantly asking if the collection still reflects, in this case, Iowa's history. and we have a very thorough vetting process with all of those experts on staff, we will make those decisions moving forward if anything should be removed from the collection. Again, this is a very common practice among museums and one that we've not been actively doing. So we will be undergoing that, but it will be very thoughtful, and our staff will make every consideration before we would make that decision to remove it. It's a very vetted process, a very thorough process, a very time-consuming process, and that's so nothing is done in haste, and we truly are upholding our role as the steward and collector of Iowa's history.
Now, I'm sure just hearing that, a lot of people are very frightened because, of course, when you remove something from your collection, it's gone. These are historical pieces that can't be replaced. What do you say to the people who are scared that we're going to lose important pieces of Iowa history here?
So I would say we're not losing important pieces of Iowa's history. I think in our 157 years of collecting, we've become more sophisticated. But there are things in our collection that have nothing to do with Iowa history. And so therefore, we should not have those in our collection since we are the collector of Iowa's history. And so what we would look to do is we would work with our cultural partners, whether that be across the state or across the country, and where should those collections best be housed? If they're not about Iowa history, they should go where they make the most sense and tell that story. I'd also say, too, there are some things that are damaged and were damaged and brought over from the original State Historical Museum. And so there are things that are irreparably damaged, and therefore there is no way that we would ever be able to conserve them, preserve them, or put them on display. And so at that point, there are various processes that we would take, again, align with best practices and standards in museums that we would adhere to go through that process.
Now, this also comes in the wake of staffing and hours cutbacks at the State Historical Society Library in Iowa City. Public day or public hours are only 3 days a week. There were three staff members after July of last year, and a lot of people have been really concerned about this. Public hours at the Research Center in Des Moines have also been cut by 40%. What can you say to the people who are really very concerned about the public having access to these materials?
So there's always a fine balance between access and preservation. And so the hour adjustments, both in Des Moines and Iowa City, reflect the collection project that our staff is working through. Our staff needs dedicated time to be able to work with the collection to better actively manage it and preserve it. And while we're doing that, those reduction in hours were necessary. And I know that's perceived as a decrease in access, but ultimately it's going to help us increase access because we're working through these assessments. We're better able to manage the collection and make very strategic decisions that will make more of our collection available, whether you come into the Research Center in Des Moines or Iowa City, at one of our eight historic sites across the state, at our state's flagship museum, or if you'd like to access it online because you're not able to make it to any of those locations. So it is very critical for us to be able to allow our staff enough time to be able to fulfill that role and responsibility of actively managing the collection.
Are there questions being asked about whether it makes sense to maintain these separate facilities in the future?
Charity, yes, there are a lot of questions around that because, you know, Susan just touched on it. And frankly, I think she touched on a lot of things that I hope to your listeners. In many cases, it's just we're going to approach this with common sense. I mean, to just point out another, I'd say one that's very obvious, especially if one is touring in our basement. If we have 12 spinning wheels that were all made in Muscatine, Iowa, by a certain family that owned that store, we may not need all 12 of those, but again, we'll work with maybe its institutions in Muscatine or across the state, again, to determine what is the best fit for those artifacts, if you will, but knowing maybe we only need one in our collection. And I think we can all agree that a common sense approach of not doing anything in haste is what we want to do. Now, again, to now skip over to back where I like how you started the conversation, Charity, when you're talking about modernizing. You know, it's kind of it's ironic that here we are talking about Iowa history and we're also talking about modernizing in the same sentence. And I think that is the opportunity here. 157 years of collecting, 209 million pieces of history in our collection. We have a lot of catching up to do. And when you look at two historical libraries that we operate, and the reality of it is, we've seen the potential that is out there when we are able to put more of the collection online. The Annals of Iowa, one of our scholarly journals through which we have a partnership with the University of Iowa, is one of my favorite examples. We see more hits to those articles online in 1 month. I think recently we may have had upwards of 15,000 hits. That is more in 1 month of people accessing the collection online than foot traffic at both historical libraries combined annually. Now, I think that just from that statistic alone, it's important to note we have to evolve. We have to be a place where not only we can embrace preservation, but we also have to be able to embrace technology to grow our audiences and especially to be able to better connect with the next generation. And that is our goal, is more access for Iowans to our history so that we, not only as the stewards of Iowa history, can continue to do that and fulfill our mission, but that ultimately at our state's flagship museum, we can truly be a symbol for our state's history.
Well, thank you both so much for talking with me today.
Thank you, Charity.
Thank you, Charity.
Mary County is director of the Iowa Department of Cultural Affairs. Susan Claver is administrator of the State Historical Society. We've been talking about an $80 million plan to renovate and modernize the State Historical Building of Iowa. It's a plan that would also make that building significantly smaller, cutting it down from 234,000 square feet to 155,000 square feet. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Lindsay Moon, Claire Roth, and Emily Woodbury. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. You can follow us on Twitter at IPR Talk. You can find us on Facebook, Iowa Public Radio, or contact us anytime, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa.